Court will now consider the fourth case, Connor versus the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Dempsey.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Scott Dempsey. I represent plaintiff appellant Kimberly Connor in this case. And on appeal, there are two issues with respect to the summary judgment granted by the district court. The first issue relates to a denial of temporary assignment pay for Ms. Connor by the department from December of 2001 through February of 2002. It was the plaintiff's contention before the trial court that that denial of temporary assignment pay constituted discrimination based on race. The second issue is the denial of a promotion for Ms. Connor in November, December of 2002 to an office administrator 3 position. Again, at the trial court, it was Ms. Connor's contention that that, again, constituted discrimination based on race. The defendants have argued that even if the court erred in determining that the office administrator 3 promotion was not within the scope of the original charge of discrimination filed by Ms. Connor, they should still prevail on the merits of the case in that Ms. Connor has failed to establish under the indirect McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting method of establishing discrimination at the summary judgment level that would allow her to then proceed to a trial on the merits before the court. Under that burden-shifting method, once the plaintiff establishes a prima facie case of discrimination by showing that she's a member of a protected class and that she suffered an adverse employment action, which in this case was the denial of the promotion to the Office Administrator 3 position, and that that promotion was in fact awarded to someone outside of the protected class, which in this case it was, to a white woman by the name of Deborah Combs, the plaintiff has established a prima facie case of discrimination based on race. That's not disputed. The defendant has alleged that they have offered a legitimate non-discriminatory reason for that promotion, and that reason proffered by the department was simply that Ms. Connor did not receive the highest score on the interviews conducted by the Department of Natural Resources. Those interviews are conducted pursuant to the Supreme Court's decision in Rutan versus Republican Party of Illinois that attempts to remove from the interview process as much discretion as possible from the interviewer and base the promotion solely on who scored the highest on the interview. And it's the department's position that they've offered a legitimate non-discriminatory reason in that Deborah Combs received the highest score on her Rutan interview, and that the burden then shifted back to the plaintiff to show that the proffered reason for the promotion, in fact, was a pretext. The department argues that even if the department argues that there is absolutely no evidence to establish that the proffered reason for the promotion was a pretext, and that these interviews were conducted according to the Rutan procedure. And that's the argument that I want to address initially in my argument. I believe that there is substantial evidence in the discovery that was done prior to the filing of the motion for summary judgment that the proffered reason for the promotion of Deborah Combs to the Office of Administrator 3 position was, in fact, a pretext. There are circumstances relating to that promotion that draw into serious question the reason for Combs receiving that promotion. First off, according to the Rutan procedure and the guidelines set forth by the State of Illinois Central Management Service, the Office of Administrator 3 position had to be posted for a certain period of time to allow applicants to submit applications. And once the applications were obtained, anyone who had a satisfactory grade from Central Management Services could submit an application, and then they would go through the Rutan interviews with Sabrina Jansen, who was the Department of Natural Resources, Human Resources individual who conducted the interviews. Some of the factors that lead to the conclusion that this promotion given to Combs was a pretext for race discrimination are, first, that before the promotion was even posted, there began a series of phone calls between Combs and the regional land manager who oversaw this particular position, James Capel. It came out during discovery that Mr. Capel was good friends with Ms. Combs' husband, knew that Ms. Combs' husband was being transferred from the Chicago area to Central Illinois, and that Ms. Combs would be in need of a job. Secondly, and most importantly, is the grading of the Rutan interviews themselves. Under the Rutan procedure, the human resources individual conducts the interviews, or someone else prepares set interview questions. They prepare desired responses to those questions, and whoever comes closest to matching the desired response to those interview questions gets the job. Well, it came out during discovery that the entire file for this Office Administrator 3 position was produced and available, but there were no interview questions in the file, and there were no desired answers. So during her discovery deposition, Sabrina Jansen was not able to really describe how she was able to grade these Rutan interviews and determine which, in fact, candidate scored the highest by coming closest to the desired responses. And in opposition to the department's motion for summary judgment, there was submitted deposition testimony from Sabrina Jansen in which she said, well, Capel sat in with me during these interviews. That was a rather unusual occurrence, since normally I'm the human relations person who conducts these interviews. He sat in with me during the interviews, and he's the one who prepared the desired responses to the Rutan questions, and he's the one who prepared those questions. Those questions, again, the answers to the Rutan questions can never be located. At his deposition, Capel testified that no, he didn't prepare the answers to the Rutan questions. He didn't have anything to do with determining what the desired answers were. He didn't know where these answers to the Rutan questions were. Obviously, if these answers to the Rutan questions were available, we can certainly determine whether or not Ms. Connor scored highest on the Rutan interviews and was in fact entitled to this position, but no one seems to know where these Rutan questions are, and obviously Capel and Sabrina Jansen are saying that the other person prepared those answers. Well, after Deborah Combs attends her interview, Ms. Connor was interviewed, and afterwards Deborah Combs was allowed to go back in, meet with Jansen and Capel for an extended period of time, and then came out. Ultimately, Deborah Combs did get the promotion. In opposition to the motion for summary judgment, there was submitted an affidavit from Kimberly Connor indicating that the answers that Sabrina Jansen allegedly recorded to the Rutan questions that were posed to Kimberly Connor were not, in fact, the answers that she gave to those Rutan questions. So with respect to whether or not there is merit to the defendant's claim that they were entitled to summary judgment in this case because my client could not establish that the proffered reason for granting summary judgment, in fact, was a pretext, I think it's clear that we have presented sufficient evidence to allow my client to proceed to a trial. This case should be remanded to the district court to permit a trial on the merits of this case.
Thank you, Mr. Dempsey. Mr. Ellis?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Illinois Assistant Attorney General Carl Elitz, appearing on behalf of the Department of Natural Resources. The argument that Mr. Dempsey just presented, I think, can be avoided by the court entirely if the court agrees with the district court judge that this case was dismissed for other reasons. I want to, while it's still fresh in my mind, though, address those issues quickly that he raised. In the complaint and in the discovery and in the brief, there's always the suggestion that Mr. Capel is the person who's the problem at the department. There's not really been a reference to Ms. Jansen as a person who harbors any sort of improper motive towards the interviewee. So I don't know that he can go very far with the argument that there's some sort of conspiracy here between Ms. Jansen and Mr. Capel when all he's got really is that they met after the interview. I don't recall the facts being that Ms. Combs, the person who got the promotion, met with the two of them after the interview. They met briefly. Ms. Jansen testified that was common for her to talk to people about the interview, never about the specific qualities that would decide the interview, but that she would meet with the supervisor and talk with him. The standard for summary judgment allows the court to take all reasonable inferences, but it doesn't have to take inferences that go to the metaphysical level. And with Mr. Capel saying he didn't discriminate, and with Ms. Jansen saying she didn't discriminate, I don't see how he can prevail on that issue. But going back to the two arguments that were the basis of the district court's decision, the problem that the plaintiff had initially here is that the EEOC charge, where she set out a great deal of information about things that she felt were wrong with the department, with the way it discriminated against her, didn't really translate into the complaint. By the time it got to the complaint stage, she had reduced her claims to, with regard to count one, two things she asserted. She asserted that she didn't get a promotion to an office administrator position, which was a position offered in 2002, and also she claimed that she was forced to work in a hostile environment. That's the claims that went forward on count one. Count two was a retaliation claim. So our trial attorney, in handling this matter, had those three considerations in his mind as we went through discovery, as we answered the complaint. Our answers to the complaint was what you'd expect for those three claims. We denied that she was working in a hostile environment, denied that she had been denied a promotion because of her race, and denied that she had been retaliated against. So now on appeal, the plaintiff is arguing about this temporary assignment pay, which was raised at the summary judgment stage. But that was not perceived by the parties or the trial judge as a claim that was a dispute. Also, with regard... Yes, Judge. I'm sorry. Do you have a question? Also, with regard to the office administrator position, which was the second job that she had applied for, that had never been part of the EEOC charge that had been made. And although my opponent argues in his brief that it was related to the prior job offer, there was no suggestion that that's really the case at all. This was a separate job with separate interviewees. So the first job went to a woman named Ms. Gallagher. The second job went to Ms. Calm. In fact, the EEOC charge was made before the decision to award the second job, the office administrator position, had even been considered by the department. So given that there had been no allegation before the EEOC with regard to that charge, it's not appropriate for that to be brought up in the district court. And that's the argument that we had made. And those are the two bases that I would suggest the court should affirm the district court's decision. First, that the temporary assignment pay question was not properly brought up in the complaint, was not a claim. And secondly, that the office administrator position was not brought before the EEOC. We don't even have to get to whether there was sufficient evidence for summary judgment, although I will stand on my brief on that question. As I said, I don't think there's sufficient evidence there.
Thank you, Mr. Elitz.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Dempsey.
I want to briefly touch upon the temporary assignment pay issue. That issue was stricken at the district court on the defense motion for summary judgment, in that the defense claimed that they had been taken by surprise when the plaintiff responded to the motion for summary judgment by raising that issue for the first time. It's not specifically set out in the plaintiff's complaint. The federal system envisions a system of notice pleading that doesn't require you to set out with any great specificity the specific theories or facts you're relying upon.
Mr. Dempsey, you chose not to respond to the cite by the state in Wislocki-Goyne versus Mears. Doesn't that totally preclude your argument?
No, it does not, Your Honor. I believe that that case is clearly distinguishable because I think in that case, the defendant was not made aware after the filing of the complaint through discovery or other means about the specific legal theories that were being pursued by the plaintiff. I think this case is much closer to Vitamus versus Laser Lab Limited, in which there were specific legal theories pled in the complaint in that case, specifically breach of contract and breach of warranty. And the first time that the issues of assumed duty or promissory estoppel were raised on the filing of a response to the motion for summary judgment, and the court said those issues can be raised because from the very beginning of this case, the plaintiff has made the defendant aware through discovery and other means that those were legal theories that they were pursuing.
This isn't really a question of pleading legal theories. The fact is that you didn't include this temporary assignment pay factual scenario as part of the complaint. Isn't that a more focused statement?
It was not alleged on the face of the complaint. It was alleged in the EEOC charge that was incorporated by reference. It was initially disclosed at the beginning of the discovery process through interrogatories that were served by the department on the plaintiff that that was a theory that they were pursuing. So the defendants claimed that the first time they became aware of this theory was when the plaintiff responded to the motion for summary judgment. Quite simply, it's not true. They were made aware of that theory from the very beginning of the case when the plaintiff responded to their interrogatories that specifically asked, what acts of racial discrimination are you alleging that the department committed? And she listed that as a specific act, the failure to award temporary assignment pay. And again, throughout discovery, that was an issue, specifically during Capel's deposition. Again, he was asked specifically about his awarding of temporary assignment pay to other individuals and the denial of temporary assignment pay to the plaintiff. Therefore, Your Honors, we'd ask that this case be remanded to the district court for a trial on the merits.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dempsey. Thank you, Mr. Ely. Case is taken under advisement. Court will